Welcome to Australia's Fiercely Independent Property Podcast.
Residential property is the only asset class we live in. It is where we raise our families, and it's our most expensive investment, yet property advice remains unregulated.
Listen to three pioneers of the property industry, each with diverse areas of expertise in property planning, buying, and education.
We'll distill the raw truth from the ill-informed.
Join the property planner, David Johnston, the property buyer, Kate Bakos.
That's me.
And the property professor, Peter Kalizos, as we take you on a journey through the maze of property, mortgage and money decisions to empower you to create your ideal lifestyle.
Welcome, everyone, to the Property Planner, Buyer and Professor podcast. It's lovely to have you back again. And what a week it's been in property. The market continues to go from strength to strength, and we've got some great insights from my two wonderful co-hosts, Dave Johnston and Kate Bakos. Dave, how are you?
I'm really well, thanks, Pete.
Excellent. What's your update for this podcast?
Well, a little interesting stat from Domain that vendors lifting their asking price during sales campaigns is lowering. So the percentage of people who are lifting their asking price has come down over the last month. So it's just another little, you know, signal of something we already know that.
I'll tell you what it's a signal of. They're a bit scared about getting busted by Consumer Affairs. The agents aren't practicing step quoting quite as badly as they were a few months ago. They're not getting away with it.
Right. Okay. Well, let's unpack that a bit. So but also, you know, it's just reinforcing the fact that we know that values are still going up, but not quite as fast as they have been. I'll just quickly share some of the locations where the proportion of house sellers who are raising their asking price mid-campaign is at the highest. So no surprise, the eastern suburbs, south region of Sydney, the Leichhardt region of Sydney, the Sutherland region of Sydney, Bayside region in Melbourne, the Northern Beaches, Sydney, Darabin South in Melbourne. So yeah, it's dominated by Melbourne and Sydney. Just another little interesting piece of data highlighting that vendor expectations are diminishing somewhat.
I find it amazing, and I won't labour it for too long, but the way that quoting works, particularly down here, is an agent will put an auction indicative quote range on it, which is usually completely unrelated from the vendor's genuine expectation and the true value of the property. It's just a bait price. And I know there's a lot of work out there for Consumer Affairs to have to tackle, and the reality is they can't tackle it all. But consumers have been getting really agitated about this underquoting issue. And in Melbourne, they had been getting away with doing what we call step quoting. So they put a silly bait price out there. They have 100 people rock up in the first week or so. No surprises, it's underquoted. It's attracting lots of hopeful people that had never had a chance of buying it. And then they'll adjust the quote range throughout the campaign and blame it on the market conditions. Oh, gee, the market's speaking and maybe we need to increase the quote. And so by the time they get to auction day, the quote is a little bit more in line, like a tad closer to the genuine expectation. That's what step quoting is all about. Now, the vendors might not have quite understood this or been as up in arms at the start of it all, because they were genuinely getting pretty excited about their resultant prices. I think vendors' genuine expectations were under that of where the market thought the property might go. But now that vendors are seeing record prices and they are getting greedy, I think they're quite reluctant to let an agent completely underquote the property to the degree that they have been underquoted. And they're saying to their agents, no, we're not putting that price on it because we want this price. And so I think it's more a case of psychological and market expectations as opposed to the market talking. Fair enough, we haven't seen the crazy headiness of March and April, but it's still pretty heady out there and there's still some really huge surprise results. So I think it's more just a case of a vendor sentiment.
Yeah, I think it's interesting to unpack the mix between agents potentially doing the wrong thing intentionally v the market starting to slow down a little bit, plus vendor expectation becoming higher because, you know, the market's been on the move for some period of time. Obviously, there's a bit of box one, a bit of box two, a bit of box three involved in each of that. But the thing it's hard for, I guess, the authorities to pick up, Kate, is how to actually pinpoint when an agent is doing the wrong thing. What are some of the clear signals for when the agent, that's what I was going to ask, what are some clear signals? Because it can be quite grey.
Yeah, a clear signal is when they're either saying that there are limited comparable sales or if their comparable sales are not comparable, when the consumer knows one sold last week in the same street and it's almost identical. And Melbourne's regime for quoting is based on this comparable sales piece. So when they're not comparable or when the agent says there are none, when we know there are some, that's a blatant lie. That's not just a mere oversight. So it's the obviousness of the quote range not being representative of the value. And if it looks too good to be true, unless there's an invisible issue with the property and the agent has genuinely factored that in, if it looks too good to be true, it probably is too good to be true.
As a buyer, it actually comes back to last week's episode and something we've talked about in the previous month or two. If you know your comparable sales,
yeah,
you're armed. Yeah. Yeah.
And you'll be able to spot, you can police it and understand it, recognise it more so when you're armed. And I chatted to someone yesterday and they said, oh, we've been looking since October last year. I said, why? Like, you're looking for the one product in the one suburb and you keep missing out, and it's not being the underbidder, that's just bad luck. It's when it flies past you, when the reserve is over your budget, that signals you haven't done your homework and you've had over 6 months to get your head around doing your homework. You're still not doing your homework. You're wondering what you're doing wrong, but you're not changing anything. If things aren't tracking well for you and you make no changes, things will continue to not track well for you.
Yeah, they could be doing their homework, but then hoping that they get a property at a good price or slightly under market value, and that's just not going to happen in this market. It doesn't, you know, you're just not going to get lucky on a decent property.
That's right.
With a low price.
Yeah, and I did say, like, for this particular couple, how many have you seen that would have been suitable? Oh, lots. You know, we loved all of these properties, but they're all flying over their budget. And I said, what is it that makes you think you can achieve buying this particular product in this suburb for this budget? And they said, oh, well, there was this one sale and we wish we were there and it went for X dollars. And that's an anomaly. You can't pick one anomaly sale and peg your hopes and expectations on that.
Okay, very good. So great insight into what's happening right at the minute, especially as quoting or underquoting is concerned. So today's topic is
conveyance. Could be a whole episode, I reckon.
Yeah, could be. Could be. Today's topic is on conveyancing, in particular cheap conveyancing and what can go wrong. And Kate, you're going to take the lead for this episode. First question I've got for you, Kate, what do conveyancers actually do?
Yeah, this is a great question. The conveyancing process involves switching a property from one owner to the new owner. So everything that has to take place there, technically, to have a new owner recorded on the title. And in addition to that, it's a process where it's part of the due diligence. The property is assessed, the contract is assessed by the person who does the conveyancing. And it's an important thing to note that you don't need a solicitor and a conveyancer. The conveyancing process has to take place, and that can be done by a conveyancer or a solicitor.
And the difference between the two, what? Because my understanding would be a solicitor would charge you more for it. Do they do any more, or we just because they've got a higher hourly rate?
Basically, the difference is their qualifications.
That's right.
Right.
So one has a degree, a law degree.
Yeah, a solicitor has a 6-year law degree, of which 6 months of those 6 years is spent on property conveyancing, whereas a licensed conveyancer spends 2 years purely studying property conveyancing. Now, there are pros and cons to each. And look, without giving away some of the headlines, ultimately, you know, it comes down to the quality of the provider you're working with, whether it's a solicitor or a property conveyancer. But in terms of qualifications perspective, that is, you know, high level the difference between a solicitor who can do property conveyancing because any solicitor is qualified to do so versus a licensed conveyancer who specialises in property conveyancing.
And Dave's point about the quality of the service provider is spot on, because you can have a property lawyer who has been totally covering property and not much else, and they've made it their career. I know property lawyers that have, you know, contributed to writing the the sale of land contracts and some of the legislation, you can get a very specialised property lawyer. And likewise, you can get a conveyancer who has been doing it for so long and so well that a lawyer could go to them for advice and to source information about specific property legislation. So it really does come down to the specialisation and the quality of the service provider.
So, Dave, can I use your lawyer or conveyancer, Victoria, to do my conveyancing work here in South Australia?
No. So there are different licensing regimes across the country. So in Queensland and ACT, all paid conveyancing work must be done by a law firm. So just to clarify that, so licensed conveyancers can work for the law firm, but they must be supervised by a solicitor. Everywhere else, if you wanted to practice as a conveyancer, you need a license in the state that you're practicing in. And a solicitor, an Australian legal practitioner granted a practicing certificate in one of Australia's states or territories, is able to practice local law in any other Australian state or territory without needing to apply for an additional practicing certificate.
Okay.
Now, interestingly, like our real estate agency licences, people can hold multiple state licences. So every now and then I might have someone from Sydney who says, I've chatted to my Sydney conveyancer and they want to do all of my conveyancing for my Melbourne purchase and they have a Victorian licence. In that case, it's fine, but it's all about having the state-based licence or ability to operate in that state.
There's a bit of pressure from conveyancers, understandably, a bit like the real estate industry, to have a nationwide licence that could cover you for any state or territory.
Yeah.
But as yet, that hasn't happened. And obviously, there's very different laws around property in each state and territory.
You're absolutely right. The legislation is so varied from the way our contracts are executed to calling offs to auction rules. It's a minefield, and I take my hat off to any buyer's agents that have been able to master getting their head around multiple state legislation, because I think there's a lot of work there to be able to manage it all very well. And you've seen my dedication to my industry. I still feel quite rusty when it comes to understanding what's going on in other states as far as legislation goes.
Yeah, well, I mean, as a buyer's agent, if you're operating across multiple states, you certainly increase risk that you may not be dotting the I's and crossing the T's across each of the state's different laws regarding property. Our preference when we refer our clients to buyer's agents is they're specialists in a local part of their city or state, because obviously that should increase the specialised knowledge. So just like conveyancing, it's pretty complex to learn and know the laws of more than one state or territory.
Yeah.
So what are the limitations of your legal representative's due diligence? What can or can't they do?
Okay. I'm happy to throw one important facet of this out there. I'm sure Dave's got some ideas too. The limitations of any conveyancer or solicitor, no matter how good they are, is reading the contract and doing the due diligence from the contract versus walking through the property. Now, when they're engaged, they're not engaged to walk through the property and assess the property. They're paid to assess the contract. And so there might be things about the property that they're not privy to. And so getting a contract review and having a solicitor say we're good to go is really contingent on the buyer's ability to understand what they need to look for that might be a showstopper that isn't reflected in the contract. So when I make this point, if someone's done a renovation and it's a significant renovation, or they've put on a deck or a pergola or a garage, it might look fine and it might pass the building inspection test. But if the conveyancer or solicitor isn't aware that it's there, let's say it's not in the sale photos or it's an off-market property or they don't look at the link, they won't know to say to you, I need to see some permits, I need to see some sign-offs in that contract. And if that's missed, you might find that you're buying property with an illegal structure. So that can be an issue, and that's not the solicitor's fault, because they haven't walked through the property and seen that spar in the backyard that doesn't have the right fencing or the new decking that wasn't making the agent's photos. And it's another reason why walking through a property and not relying on online pictures is really vital, because you do need to be prepared to tell the solicitor anything that you've spotted that might be relevant to a contract inclusion.
So that could be some stuff that they miss. But what are things that they can often uncover that buyers can miss? Even though the buyer walks through the property, what can their conveyancer or solicitor pick up?
They might pick up that the paperwork for an extension is sort of there, but it's not completely finalised. So the certificate of occupancy or the builder's warranty insurance is missing. Little details like that can make a big difference, because if it's not all legal, the buyer takes on that responsibility going forward. The invisible things are things like easements, covenants, and caveats. So if a buyer doesn't know how to read a title plan, or if the easement isn't showing on the title plan but it is showing on a water certificate, let's say, and this can happen, then they won't know that the easement is running through where they're planning on putting a pool or a garage. And so the purchase might not have the same appeal if the easement restricts them from doing what they wanted to do. And likewise, if there's a covenant there, let's say you're buying a property and you think there's enough space in the backyard and down the side of the house to put a second unit at the back and do a subdivision one day. If it's got a single dwelling covenant on it, you can kiss that plan goodbye. And you don't want to be paying a premium at auction for a property that you think is subdividable because you haven't done your homework. And a caveat is a tricky issue. That means that someone else has a claim on that property. And while caveats need to be removed for settlement to go through, that it could signal an issue that you really don't want to buy into. It could be, you know, a really disastrous family fight or a neighbourhood dispute or something that is not going to be a joy to take on. So these are the things that, just some of the things that solicitors can pick up on, and conveyancers for that matter. And zoning is a big one. We can always spot a zone and we know where to look on the portal, but your average buyer might not. So if it's a commercially zoned property that looks and feels like a residential apartment, you might not be able to finance it. And a solicitor or conveyancer will generally pick that out.
Right. So it's very important to have a conveyancer or solicitor. I know some people, very rarely, some people try and do their own conveyancing here in South Australia, but I highly recommend against doing that.
Yeah.
But it's very important that you have your legal representative look through your paperwork, because there are these sorts of things that the trained eye can pick up that a buyer who might be just buying a house for the first time or may only buy two or three properties in their whole lifetime can't actually spot.
Just a quick reminder, you can access our show notes, including links to all of the resources we talk about, on our website, which is propertyplannerbuyerandprofessor.com.au.
I've actually got three examples. One example, the conveyancer picked up that the vendor had sneakily provided an old body corporate certificate with the contract of sale. So they dug in to get the most recent one, and turned out the body corporate didn't have sufficient funds and the elevators were due for a service, which meant each owner was potentially going to have to come up with $20,000 each in the next financial year to carry out repairs. So that was picked up by our client solicitor. Another example where the cladding was not compliant, the solicitor was able to provide the client ammunition and they were able to negotiate a further $10,000 off the purchase price because of the solicitor's work reviewing the contract. A third example where the fence line had previously been moved in a subdivision that went through the land titles office, but the purchaser was unaware of that. They just saw the fence line of the property they were buying, and so they are actually able to access a further 30 square metres because of that being picked up by the conveyancer. Although, interestingly, the conveyancer picked that up, but then to manage the legal ramifications of working through getting that adjusted and getting themselves the extra 30 square metres, they then swapped to a solicitor to manage that for them.
Excellent.
But there's a few, great
They're
examples.
Good ones. They're really good ones. I feel like I could write an encyclopedia of things that have been picked up, because they happen, you know, on a daily basis for us. And a lot of our reviews are showstoppers for the purchase going forward. That's a good review. It's not joyous for a client to fall in love with the property and then realise that they shouldn't be going for it, but better to find out before than after. And it can relate to courtyards, for example. We often think that a courtyard's on title because the diagram on the back of the brochure shows it is, or the agent says it is, and there's a fence there. Some courtyards are on leasehold, which means they're slightly less valuable, and some courtyards are just fenced, but it's actually common area. and every now and then there's a fence around someone else's land. So you do see all that kind of stuff, and then not even talking about car parks on title or company share title and stratum title. They're the things that can make or break a purchase. So I think on a daily basis, both of our businesses, Dave, would see solicitors and conveyancers making a critical difference.
Yeah, and I think that sort of reinforces the point of why we would suggest, you know, don't skimp on the conveyancer or solicitor that you use. I mean, you're making hundreds of thousands or multi-million dollar decision. Spending a little bit extra on a quality conveyancer or solicitor, hopefully there's nothing wrong and it's you know, they're able to tick all the boxes and it flows through smoothly. But if there is something wrong, you want to be able to trust the professional you're working with to be able to pick it up and then also help you navigate that challenge.
So what does a conveyancer usually cost then? What can our listeners expect to pay when they engage a conveyancer or solicitor?
Depends on which state you're in.
Mm-hmm. Ours is several hundred dollars. You get a conveyancer to do it, it's going to cost you $600,000-$700,000. But that doesn't matter if it's a $300,000 property or a $3 million property. You know, it's not like the commission on selling your home. It's a fee, straight out fee. What's it like in Melbourne?
Well, a good conveyancer, and I know this sounds terrible, but, you know, the bargain basement ones with the neon sign saying $499, I struggle with that because it's a serious job and it can span for many, many hours. Conveyances that we use typically would range from somewhere like $800, $900 to maybe $1,100, $1,200. And there's also a thing called disbursements. So the conveyancing fee plus disbursements is often how they quote it. Disbursements are all of the things that there's no markup on. They have to order them and pay for them, title searches and certificates and owner's corporation certificates. Those things are not free. And sometimes you can skimp and say to the conveyancer, I don't worry about it. If I don't have to have it, don't order it. But if you're making a significant purchase, we always recommend you should. So I say to anyone, circle something between $1,300 and $1,700, and that's about what you should expect for a normal file that doesn't have excessive complications and isn't, you know, a 10 centimetre thick off the plan contract that takes them a day to read.
Yeah, so those several hundred dollars, that's just what the conveyancer is going to charge you for their work. But there's also searches that need to be done, which will cost you just over $300. And that's not including any body corporate searches. So, yeah, it'll be all up, all your conveyancing fees, including the searches that they must do, the mandatory searches, land title searches included, plus what the conveyancer is going to do. It'll be should be just over $1,000 here in South Australia. It looks like it's about the same in Victoria.
Oh, I'd say it's a bit more. And if you're working with some solicitors, you'd be looking at perhaps $2,000 up to $3,000. So perhaps somewhere between, you know, $1,300, $1,500 all up to $3,000.
All right. That's
and
a
in
good
fairness
guy.
To, you know, pricing between solicitors and conveyancers, they vary just like any profession does. I know of some solicitors that are cheaper than some conveyancers, but in the main, generally you'll pay a little bit more for a solicitor. And if it's a tricky file that might need a solicitor's input or expertise for related issues, it will work out cheaper in those situations to just go straight to the solicitor, because you don't want to be paying a conveyancer and then getting transferred additionally to a solicitor if there's complexity that, like that situation you talked about, Dave, they needed, you know, whether it's deeds to be written up or legal things to be worked through.
So in regards to their contracts, can they be altered?
Yeah, a contract can be altered. And like anything in property, it just needs a negotiation to take place, an agreement to be reached. And the things that can be altered are usually special conditions. You can't tamper with the particulars of the property. If you're given information about a property, like, you know, on the title, that's not to be tampered with because it's a factual piece of information. But if a solicitor has or a conveyancer has created special conditions, they can be argued, and you can also have special conditions put into the contract for your purchase. It just has to be agreed to.
Right, very good. And how do reviews actually work in the real world?
If you're buying, you can ask a conveyancer or solicitor to review the contract of sale and vendor's statement, and basically, you know, they're looking for any potential errors, unusual clauses, and any other red flags. So they'll also inform you of what the contract entails, any important dates potentially throughout the settlement period, give you advice on conditions which can be added to protect you. So, you know, having a conveyancer or a solicitor read and explain the information before you commit to the purchase, you know, will protect you from potentially expensive risks, such as, like we've talked about, buying a house with an illegal extension, for example. If they happen to pick it up, there's a risk they may not, because if they generally won't go through the property, like Kate's example. Particularly in today's market where people are feeling quite pressured at times to turn around and purchase a property quickly, we always recommend that you get the contract fully perused in advance by the solicitor or conveyancer.
So you make it mandatory, Dave, for your clients?
We don't provide a buyer's advocacy service. Oh. We support people with property selection, obviously the mortgage service and property planning. So we can't tell them you have to do it. But, you know, I think that's more intertwined probably. Also, from a risk management perspective, we suggest, yeah, you should do this.
Oh, you recommend.
Time.
Excellent.
I highly recommend, yeah.
What about you, Kate? Do you make it mandatory for your clients?
Yeah, no review, no work.
Oh, right. That's strict. Okay. Because it's considered that important.
Absolutely. Yeah, I don't want to touch it. If someone thinks they can read a contract, I don't want to touch the file. Mm-hmm. And I need a written review, and it's got to be thorough. And you know, we can't enforce what legal representative they use. That's absolutely up to the consumer. But I'm always pretty nervous if a review comes back in 30 seconds saying good to go.
All right. So we've talked a lot about conveyancing and solicitors and what they do and what they might miss and what they can pick up. How do you find a good one, though? There's plenty of them out there. How do we find a good one?
Yeah, word of mouth is very, very valuable in these circles. And sometimes you'll see fantastic reviews on forums. And if you are part of a property forum, you can put the question out there and get someone. And you don't have to physically meet them. A solicitor or conveyancer in your state can do a great job from behind the screen. But you want to understand what the recommendation is based on. If it's because they're so thorough and they're really good, that's a great place to start. And a lot of people ask the agent for a referral. Now, bear in mind, sometimes agents get kickbacks because some firms will pay an introducer's fee, and that's not a great one. You really want something, you want a referral that is a genuine referral that's based on someone's confidence in another service provider.
Yeah, I'm often asked by people, can I recommend a conveyancer? And I recommend the conveyancer that I use. You know, I don't go on price, I go on service. You know, somebody that if I ring them, they're going to call me back the next day, they're thorough. That's the sort of service that I want, because you're dealing with hundreds of thousands or more in dollars, so you want to make sure that you pick the right person. We're not going to the bottom of the barrel and picking the cheapest one.
Well, 100%. Yeah. I agree with both of what you've said, Jace. Select someone who you've been reliably informed provides a really good service, who you can trust to look after you and protect your interests during a property purchase.
Yeah. So if somebody's looking for a pre-purchase review, what can they expect and how long do you think the turnaround will be? Because as we understand, you know, when you're putting in offers on property, the clock is ticking, so you want it to be done fairly efficiently.
Yeah, the more you're on the front foot, the more time you've got, you know, up your sleeve. But in this market, we all know it, in every city, capital and regional, we're seeing deals coming to the fore really quickly and time pressure is sometimes unexpected. So you should get onto it as soon as you possibly can once you've made a decision that you want to move forward pending the review. And you've got to ask your legal rep, you know, what's your turnaround time right now? What sort of lead time do you need from me? Or this is pretty urgent. Are you able to do it same day or overnight? You've got to let them know what's going on, because they can look it up and see that the auction date's 3 weeks away. They might think they've got a couple of weeks. The first thing is just being really straight up with them about what sort of time frame they can deliver for you. And usually it's just a case of forwarding the contract PDF to them. And I prefer written notes. Sometimes they'll debrief you and call you. Other times they might send you a voice recording. As long as you've got some valuable notes and you know what to challenge and what to look out for. So that's generally how it works. And in terms of cost, some will absorb the cost in the overall conveyancing fees, and that comes out at settlement, while others will charge a specific review fee And some will also offer maybe two or three free reviews and then it's on the clock. So it just depends on what they're offering, but you've got to ask so that there are no awkward surprises.
Yeah, and I think if they charge a review fee, you know, you should be comfortable with that. They're providing a service. If they're very good at what they do, they're probably more likely to charge a review fee. And, you know, they are required to, you know, they're going to have plenty of files that they're looking after, plenty of other clients they're looking after at the same time. And sometimes, you know, a review needs to be turned around same day or 24 hours. So they've got to drop everything they were doing or work longer that day. So forewarning that that's what you want them to do for properties before you purchase them or put in offers or negotiate so they're ready for it is something, and understanding the cost is really important.
Excellent. Okay, that's a great way to wrap up. And please don't go away. We've got our gold nuggets coming up.
If you've enjoyed our podcast, leave a review on iTunes and share the episode with your friends.
Now it's time for us to go mining for our gold nugget property tip of the day.
Kate, what's your gold nugget?
My gold nugget is being able to look at the solicitor's review and work out for yourself which bits are showstoppers and which bits are nice to haves. And so when we get a legal review, whether it's from the conveyancer or the solicitor, they'll often make some recommendations, and they can typically be around things like finance approval or building inspections and sometimes special conditions. They might point out that there's an onerous special condition that's charging penalties beyond the statutory penalty rate. That can feel a little bit unpleasant for any buyer when they're looking at these potential late fees that seem really unfair. But you've got to put it into perspective and work out what is comfortable for you. Is it a genuine showstopper? Is it preventing you from wanting to move forward if it can't be negotiated out? Or is it just a bit of an unpleasant thing that is highly unlikely and you can live with if worst came to worst? And being clear on that will help you move forward, because I've seen buyers sometimes get very sensitised to a review that points out onerous special conditions and they get spooked. You shouldn't get spooked. You should try for getting them taken out of the contract or make an educated decision about how your price is reflected in terms of those conditions.
Thank you, Kate. What about you, Dave? What's your gold nugget?
So my gold nugget is, you know, there are great property conveyancers and there are great solicitors who provide property conveyancing. And you need to choose what's right for you. Often property conveyancers will be a bit less expensive than solicitors. And so that might be the driver for you. You can get a property conveyancer who does a property conveyancing job just as well as a solicitor, and their cost, it will often be lower. The one thing that a property conveyancer won't be able to do is resolve certain legal issues should they come up during the process, because that's outside of their qualifications. So that is one clear differential. It may or may not be necessary, and it shouldn't necessarily be a differentiator between who you decide to work with. But that is just something to understand, that certain legal issues that might come up, a solicitor will be able to assist you, whereas a property conveyancer may not be able to assist you on certain occasions. So, but again, there are great property conveyancers, and thank you to Natalie Ambezi from Prestige Conveyancing for providing me with some intel for our episode today. And thank you to Stephen Teal from Turks Legal, who is obviously a solicitor who did the same. So I'm sitting on the fence as to which is better, but that...
Each way bet, Dave, that's a safe way to be. Very good. All right, thank you, Dave, for those gold nuggets, and thank you too for listening. We hope you've been able to pick up your own gold nuggets from our episode today, and we look forward to being with you next week. So bye for now.
See you later.
See you in a week.
If you've enjoyed this episode and would like to get yourself purchase ready, take a listen to episode number 6, What Determines Your Property Strategy, episode number 20, Bidding Tactics 101, episode number 33, Starting Without a Plan and an End Goal, number 3 of the Top 7 Critical Mistakes, and episode number 60, Preparing for Auction, number 1, Appraising, Budget Setting, Due Diligence, Reserves, Low Ball Offers and Auction Twists.
Thank you for joining the property planner, David Johnston, whose company Property Planning Australia provides the only independent pure planning advisory in Australia that does not buy or sell property, insurance, investment or super product.
And the property buyer, Kate Bacos, recently awarded Buyer's Agent of the Year and an owner of an independent buyer's agency in Melbourne's Inner West. And of course, the property professor, Peter Kalizos, Australia's leading property university lecturer, chairman of Property Investment Professionals of Australia, and seasoned investor and developer.
We've really enjoyed delivering this podcast, and we'd love you to join us on our podcast webpage at propertyplannerbuyerandprofessor.com.au or our Facebook page. Feel free to send us any questions and Dave, Pete and I will answer them for you.
So until next time, remember that each property decision you make is leading you towards your ideal lifestyle.
Everything we talk about in this episode is general in nature and should not be considered to be financial advice. We've put a lot of effort into making sure the information is accurate, but please don't rely on this information to make a decision. If you're looking for specific advice, please seek the help of a specialist, and remember, it's important you determine your trusted advisors are independent.